if you ever have an opportunity to operate one of those toy cars that children operate, I don't mean the ones they put on their carpet and they move them around and go vroom vroom and race them across the carpet. Not those. The toy cars that a child sits on and has pedals, so the child can move the so-called car with pedals. If you ever have an opportunity to sit on one of them, and why wouldn't you? You were a child once, weren't you? So you almost certainly did at one point have an opportunity to sit on one of them. You're probably not going to have an opportunity again because you're no longer a child, hopefully. If you are still a child, this program is completely unsuitable for you. Don't listen to this. If you've had an opportunity to sit on one of those things and operate it, then you were a child at one point. So you'll know exactly what I'm going to say then here. So there's no point me going into this at all. You know exactly what I'm going to say. Everything I say, you're going to say, I know that. I've had an opportunity to operate one of those toy cars in the past. I was a child once. There'd be no point me going into this then. So I'll leave this alone then. I'll leave well enough alone because I don't want to draw your wrath. Those of you who know everything about life, not in a position to learn anything new about anything, you can't possibly countenance the idea that you might have missed out on something in that time of your life and not learned everything. That there might be something new to learn from someone else speaking about it who may have had a different experience than you. No, you can't countenance that. You think, oh no, I've already driven one of those things. I was a child, so I know everything about it. So you can't possibly tell me, if you ever have an opportunity to cycle in one of these cars, here's an observation that won't have occurred to you. No, everything's occurred to me, you're thinking. I know everything. I know everything. I'm all powerful, all knowing. I'm the Alpha and the Omega and everything in between. And I'm everything after the Omega, because if it's between the Alpha and the Omega, surely that just goes from A to O. There's another whole half of the alphabet after that. So I know everything from the Alpha to the Zebra or wherever it is and wherever else comes after that. When you get from A to Z and you keep going because time is infinite, do you go and start A1 then and B2 and B3? You're just getting into naming vitamins then. You don't need vitamins if you're already infinite. Why would you need vitamins? I suppose maybe you're infinite in that you have all the time in the world, but that doesn't mean you're infinitely healthy. So you need to keep on top of your vitamins, I suppose. There's that. But does any of this make sense to you? No. And yet you're telling me you know all about this already because you were once a child and you've experienced operating one of these toy pedal cars. Okay. Well, how about one of those cars that they have in shopping centres? They don't have pedals on them. They're even less realistic than the ones that you'd operate with pedals, pedal around in the shining hotel corridors. You have one of those cars that the child sits in while you're shopping in the supermarket. You put a coin into it and then it goes forward a few inches and then it reverses a few inches and then it goes forward a few inches and then it reverses a few inches. And it's not making any progress anywhere, even if you steer it. One thing you could learn from one of those cars is how to get into a tight parking space. Because in theory, going forward a few inches, then back a few inches, then forward a few inches, then back a few inches, like one of those toy cars outside the supermarket. If you turn the wheel very, very, very slightly on each reverse, that could get you into a very tight parking space. I take that back. Those cars are somewhat realistic. You do stand to learn something from this episode after all, don't you? Not great. So stay tuned for more of that. Once upon a time, there was a dog. Basically a dog. And this dog, he was walking along the road one day, minding his own business. following the yellow line at the side of the road. That's something I do sometimes nowadays. There's a dotted yellow line along the sides of many roads. Sometimes you have a double continuous line, which is my favourite, especially if I see it in a car park. But I'm walking out to a car park and there's a well-painted double yellow line in some regions that marks off the side of the carriageway for me. I use it to find my way. They often have a double yellow line, nice and clear. It's as useful for walking along as that bit of wire was for that French fella who did the tightrope walk between the twin towers of the World Trade Center in the 70s or 80s. Now, those weren't double yellow lines. He was a lunatic. He walked along a tightrope between the twin towers. May they rest in peace. Now, I don't do that, and I don't do tightrope walking. Well, sometimes in daylight, particularly, because of how my eyes work, I see this double yellow line in a car park. I say, oh, that's great. I can follow that to safety. Because it's at the edge of the driving area, it's at the edge of the laneway or roadway or whatever. If I follow this angle, I end up not walking in front of a car. And that's great. Especially if it's on a nice, fresh, black tarmac surface. White or grey concrete melts into the grey sky in this country, and it may as well just be nothing. May as well just be an empty bit of sky. Any footpath that's made of grey concrete may as well just be empty sky. I might as well just put empty sky there. It'd be just as well painting some empty sky. These pictures that some artists do, they'll do a street painting on a road. They'll paint what looks like a huge hole in the road, with fire-breathing dragons at the bottom of the hole, and it looks very realistic. That may as well be what the footpaths are here, because they're all made of grey concrete. The sky is always grey in this country, and the footpaths are grey as well, so they all melt in together if you're me. So, that's quite useful if you have a well-painted double yellow line that hasn't faded, and it's on the back of some black tarmac. That's extremely helpful. And not just because it stops people parking there. No. It stops me from parking myself in front of a car. So well done, anyone who does that in your car park. Nice, clean, well-painted double yellow lines, for contrast. They're great. Absolutely great. They're like that cereal. What's that cereal that Tony the Tiger is always going on about? They're called Frosties here, but you may know them as Frosted Flakes. Us normal adults know them as Kellogg's Corn Flakes with a bit of extra sugar or something put in to make them palatable. They also have other ones where they have a bit of sugar and a ton of honey added in to make them even more palatable. And then they have other ones where they say, oh, we're making these out of the honey nut corn flakes, but they're clusters. We stick them all together so you can munch on them like a cinema snack. It's like having popcorn for breakfast. No doubt there are cereals that are literally popping candy, as you Americans call it, and popping candy, as people here call it, despite never using the word candy for anything else. They say popping candy, even though we don't call sweets candy. However, it's popping sweets. You forget that we call it sweets here, that we don't use the word candy, and then we say popping candy. Absolutely, I suppose it makes sense. But no, popping candy and popcorn are two entirely different things. Popcorn is a vegetable being manipulated to turn it into a savoury dessert or snack of some kind. But popcorn is a vegetable. Popping candy is not. Popping candy is basically sugar. Oh wait, am I thinking, oh yes, there's candy floss as well. Is that a separate thing as well? Oh, that's right. Popping candy is the thing where when you put it in your mouth, it starts popping. It rips the inside of your mouth to shreds, if you're in any way delicate. It rips the inside of your mouth to shreds. Popping candy is basically like putting a gun in your mouth. It mightn't be a loaded gun, or it might be a gun loaded with blanks, or a toy gun or something, or one of those guns that the cops use to just slow you down a bit and hopefully not kill you. You don't want those in your mouth. You don't want guns and things in your mouth. You don't want popping candy in your mouth. No, you don't want popping candy. If it's popping in your mouth, what in the name of Christ is it going to be doing further down in your trachea and in your digestive system and after you finish digesting it? I suppose that could be fun. over Christmas, I watched the new prequel to the Willy Wonka movies called Wonka. It's about Willy Wonka, the magical, reclusive, weird sweet factory owner. And that was quite interesting. I presume you had to go for a PG certificate for that thing to make money. It's very important. They can't just put any old shit in it because then they end up going, oh, this is for 18-year-olds only or 21s and over. So they can't have stuff where the popping candy doesn't activate until it gets to your bowels. Well, that would be quite exciting. And that's something you can imagine Willy Wonka doing just before it gets to the anus. Maybe it makes you break wind a lot. I was breaking wind a lot this morning as a matter of interest. Well, of interest to me. There was no explanation for it. I woke up around 7. I laid in bed until around 8:30 and I farted several times during that 90 minutes or so. Every few minutes, I let out a fart. What's that about? I wasn't eating anything particularly unusual yesterday. Unless you think mashed potato and a bit of lamb is unusual, I don't. I think that's a perfectly normal meal for an adult male in this country to be eating. Maybe I had something else after that. I didn't have popping candy, though. I'm not against the idea of recreational eating with a view to causing recreational farting in a controlled way. Just like you have a controlled explosion on a bomb or on fireworks. Has to be controlled and timed. You have to have some knowledge of what's going to happen and when, so you can prepare and do it safely. So I imagine popping candy could be something enjoyable in that way. It was in the news last year that people in this country are doing recreational diarrhea medicine. So they take a load of diarrhoea tablets all in one go and clog themselves up for a couple of days and enjoy the novelty of not needing to sit down in the bathroom at all for a couple of days. Apparently that's what they're doing for recreation now. I think that's a great idea. I just don't recommend it. Seems medically unsafe. It seems risky. Don't do stuff like that just because you hear me claiming to have heard about it. I did hear about it, but don't trust me on about stuff like that. This isn't a documentary, even though it's true. This isn't a documentary. It's not an advisory program. No, this is for entertainment purposes only. And if you're not entertained, I don't know what to tell you. Are you not entertained? You're probably not. You're probably not. Are you not entertained? No. When I say, are you not entertained? Just like your man did on Gladiator. Your man on Gladiator, the movie, made to do Gladiator stuff in the Colosseum to entertain the crowd. So he starts doing violent stuff and he goes to the crowd, are you not entertained? He could have easily gone, are you entertained? Yes or no. But he tried to confuse them. When you do, are you not entertained? That's almost a double negative. You might as well have gone, are you not unentertained? Or the opposite thereof. It'd be very confusing. I suppose he was easier to understand in the movie, because despite them all being Italian or Roman or wherever the Romans were, I presume the Romans were all Italian. The Colosseum is in Rome and Rome is in Italy. I know you Americans have a place called Rome over there that you like to go on about, but no, I'm talking about the one in Italy. I've been to Rome. You can go to the Colosseum and there's a fella outside dressed as a gladiator and he goes up to tourists and he stands beside you and takes a photo with an inflatable sword or something and he holds it up to your head to look hilarious and takes a picture and then he comes up and says, here, do you want a picture of yourself? And then he goes, that'll be $20 or whatever the hell currency they use over there. Is it euros? It probably is euros now. In fact, it probably was euros when I went. They still managed to con me out of whatever fucking amount they paid for that. It's absolutely appalling. But it's not half as appalling as what used to go on in that Colosseum before it fell down. They used to get these bulls or whatever they were. They bulls? I think they were bulls. Oh no, were they lions and tigers? Oh yes, there were lions and tigers and wild cats, and they get them in the cage and then they bring them out and you'd have a fight. You'd have a man and a cat. Cat, you're a cat, but you're hungry and there's a man you can fight and try to eat. Man, you're hungry too, and if you try to fight this cat and survive, you might get some dinner today, or else you might just end up dead, and then you'll be freed of this gladiatorial life. How do you get sold into the gladiator life? I don't know. Maybe you're a slave and you're too good at it. They say, oh, this fella's too good to be a normal slave. He should be doing more than normal slave stuff. He should be fighting giant prehistoric cats. So they sell you off to this gladiator fella who pays a premium for these particular slaves who are good at fighting cats. He used to pay a premium for that in those days. Now, they weren't using the euro back then. It was during the 2000s the euro came in. I remember, in fact, because I was working in the bovine spongiform encephalitis division of the government in those days, and we had to start talking about mad cows in euros instead of Irish pounds. And of course, the whole concept of are you not entertained takes on a whole new meaning with the Gladiator sequel. Whoever did that in the second movie, I didn't see it, but I presume they went, are you not entertained in that as well? And the problem there is that perhaps the fictional audience or the historical audience in the Colosseum were entertained, but the people watching him, there was a second audience there, and that was the cinema audience, and they're watching this fella asking an ancient audience from a couple of thousand years ago whether they're entertained or not, and the people in the crowd go, yes, we're entertained, thank you very much, we are entertained, thank you, this is great, great entertainment, we brought my family out for the afternoon and we watched this fella getting killed, it's great. But then there's people in the cinema as well, and they're going, is he asking us? Because we're not. If you're asking us, the answer is no. We're not entertained. This is absolute tripe. This is pure unmitigated drivel. I really thought that when I paid 12 euros to go and see a sequel to Gladiator made about 30 years after the original one, an entirely different cast that's been rewritten numerous times, including by Nick Cave, who just did it for fun and wrote Jesus into it. No, not entertained, no. And why'd you go to see it? What were you expecting? And now that I think of it, there's a good chance that the guy in the second movie didn't say, are you not entertained? Because that's a line from the first movie. They weren't just repeating every line over and over, word for word. I've mentioned this before, but Nick Cave, the Australian singer, writes dark songs, murder ballads. He put Kylie Minogue, the then bubblegum pop singer and Australian soap star, into a murder song. He was invited for some reason to write a plot for a sequel to Gladiator many years ago. And he said he had great fun doing it because he knew it wasn't going to be used anyway. If I remember rightly, he put Jesus or God or someone in Gladiator 2. It probably sounds less ridiculous when you remember that this was all happening during biblical times, historically. So I suppose there's that. But no, if you went to see Gladiator 2, you had reasonable expectations. You said, I'm going to enjoy this for what it is. I'll enjoy it as a... Oh, it's like when you watch some shit on the television that you know what's going to be shit, but you watch it anyway just to enjoy it being shit. I'm watching this ironically. It's ironic that I'm watching this. There's a difference between being stupid and being ironic, or being an absolute waster. I know damn well I'm not going to enjoy this. I'm going to watch it anyway and then tell people I'm watching it ironically. Maybe you are watching it ironically, but are you enjoying watching it ironically? No. You're not. Are you enjoying not enjoying it? No, you're not either. You might claim there's a double negative. You can say I'm enjoying not enjoying it, not ironically or something. No, that doesn't work. Double negative is not as simple as just doing the maths and making sure you have enough negatives to make a positive. No, something actually has to come of it. I'm not Gladiator 3. Last time I mentioned Gladiator on here, I turned one of the clips into a video for the Into Your Head shorts. I looked for Gladiator clips. It gives you a clip of a field of corn and a couple of hands pushing the corn apart. So it looks very like one of the dream sequences from Gladiator. It was a dream sequence or an afterlife sequence or a walking through fields of corn sequence, whatever it is. You can get one of them, it's pretty much standard now. It's like the way you have Popeye now. Some of Popeye now has gone public domain, where we look up and say, oh, does that mean I can make a Popeye movie now or something? Or I can just do whatever I want, start selling Popeyes in the street. Where you look it up and it's not as simple as that. There's rules and things, there's limitations, there's people own their stuff that they've made from Popeye. There's all sorts of complications that are very difficult to understand. Thing you have to remember about Popeye. There was something I wanted to mention about Popeye that I've been meaning to say. If Popeye has to drink this disgusting liquid spinach from a can every time he wants to beat up another sailor, whatever he does in those cartoons, then Superman should at least have to drink half a barrel of aviation fuel every time he does what supposedly is him flying. Which it probably isn't. He's probably not flying at all. I know the actor isn't flying. But Superman, the actual Superman in the fiction, I know it's not real, but if it was real, it still wouldn't be flying. It'd be more realistic. If every time you had to go and rescue someone, you had to find out where the nearest airport was. At least an airfield of some kind. Maybe an unused racing track or something, so he can run along. Instead of just magically having the power to fly, he has the magical power to run very fast, and he does stuff with that power. So, for example, he discovers one day he's practicing his magical running power that he has. He gets up to a great speed, breaks the 4-minute mile, which humans did some time ago. Then he breaks the 5-minute mile. Oh no, the 3-minute mile. Then the 2-minute mile. He gets better and better at it, faster and faster at it. And then he happens to read a book about how aviation works. And he realizes if he forms himself into the correct aerodynamic configuration, puts his hands and legs in the right way, moves his hands properly to allow the airflow where it needs to go, does everything an airplane does. And he realizes if he gets running along this airfield, he can naturally take off into the air and fly. And there's no magic involved except for the being able to run very fast is what sets him off on it. I would find that more credible than just going, oh, he has a little button in his head. He says, I want to fly now. I'm going to just take off. No. I know birds do that. Birds, for some reason, don't have to take off along a runway or start running very fast before they take off. No. That's why birds are not believable. Birds are less believable than Superman, almost, I would argue. Maybe. I suppose you think of a bird as more like a helicopter than an aeroplane, if anything. Because a bird can just take off pretty much vertically. I suppose a helicopter can do that as well. I've been in a helicopter. Helicopters are terrifying. I would not want to travel in a helicopter much. So if I was a baby bird learning to fly and I found out it works pretty much the same way as a helicopter, you take up straight up into the air. That's terrifying. I wouldn't want to do that. So no wonder it's so hard to learn to fly. I know they don't need to run along a runway. But if I was a bird raising my first set of bird children and I wanted to introduce them to flying, want them to fly the nest for the first time, I would pretend to them that you have to run along a runway instead of just taking up straight off like a helicopter. Because that's a lot less intimidating. They say, oh no, you don't have to take straight up like a helicopter and then plunge straight down. I would tell them, no, you land and take off by gently going horizontally, pick up speed along the ground. And when you're landing, you come along horizontally to the ground and you gently come down and land on the runway. You tell them that, even though it's not true, you know full well as a bird that you can take off like a helicopter. Don't tell them that you can do it the helicopter way until they've got used to flying, until they've had at least a few weeks of flying under their belt. That'd be a lot less scary for the baby birds if you're teaching to fly. You put a bit of thought into this. That's what you do. I wonder. I'm not familiar with the comic book universe or the Marvel universe or all these things you nerds watch. I wonder, is there a Superman somewhere where he has a kid and he has to teach the kid how to fly? I wonder, does he have the sense to do it that way that I've just described? Or does he just go, oh no, you just take off straight into the air. I know it's scary, but you're magic. Fuck it. No. And can you imagine being rescued by Superman if he's going around behaving like that, you're that girl who falls into the Niagara Falls in the first or second Christopher Reeve Superman movie, and he very kindly shows up and rescues you. And then he plunges down somewhere and lands straight down on the ground like a helicopter. That's going to be absolutely terrifying for the child. He's just been through a very traumatic fall, almost died falling into the Niagara Falls. Are you going to land like a helicopter, which is even more terrifying? Superman, just because you're not afraid of flying doesn't mean you don't have to think about your passengers. That's all I'm saying. Even a pilot on an airplane has to think about nervous passengers. Be a bit considerate in how they make their announcements and things like that. If you were on a plane and it just went straight down like a helicopter, or if it did that thing, the one time I was on a helicopter in South Africa, there was an ex-military helicopter who was on a helicopter tour along the coast from Cape Town, took a sharp left over a cliff and starts plunging down, and the pilots turn up the radio and say, "You're in the army now by status quo." Imagine if a pilot on Ryanair did something like that. They wouldn't, because it's a budget airline. You have to pay to perform pop songs like that on your public address system, so they wouldn't do that. I still don't know. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Into your head. If you're listening to this on a bicycle, hopefully you're not wearing headphones or earphones while cycling. That's reckless. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's reckless. Absolutely reckless. You need your ears open while you're cycling. For one thing, you may well run me over. You're probably going to run me over anyway, but at least this way you'll be able to hear my final screams and gasps. You'll remember that, and you'll be more effective when you go to do your community service, giving talks in your local school about how cyclists need to not run me over. You'll be able to use that memory of atrocious noises you heard from me dying after you run me over, and that'll fuel your creativity for your talks that you give. At least you'll get something out of that. You'll be able to go, "Oh, I did this terrible thing, and I was forced to go and do community service, and I went and talked to the kids about doing drugs." Except it wasn't about doing drugs. It was about running people over with your bicycle because you had your headphones on. I went to give talks about that. I wasn't looking forward to it, because I'd have looked forward to it more, you'll be thinking, if I'd been a drug dealer or a drug abuser and I had to give a talk about that to the children. But no, now I have to give a talk about how I'm a cyclist and I'm very bad at cycling. That's not really what I imagined my life of crime to be like when I was fantasizing about it. That's what you're thinking. That's why you don't wear headphones while cycling. You don't want to end up in the school somewhere because the judge told you to give a talk to the school. You don't want to be giving a talk about how you managed to turn your cycling hobby into a life of crime. The least cool life of crime they could possibly have. I know you're thinking maybe drug dealers have bicycles. They probably do. But if you're a drug dealer for 10 years and then you turn your life around, for which, well done, I applaud you for that. You turn your life around, you become an honest, decent human being. You serve your sentence, your judges give you a community service or something, or else you're doing it voluntarily. You're going around to give talks to children about your life of drugs and crime. You're not going to stress the fact that your terrible but cool life of crime involves cycling. You deliver the drugs by bicycle. People sitting there in their flat with the munchies, they'd ring up their dealer with you and say, "Bring us around some drugs, please. I'd like to do a deal." You wouldn't stress to the children when you're giving this talk in the school the fact that you were doing it on a bicycle. No, you just say, "Oh yes, I went round to these people's houses." You probably imply maybe that he got one of those internet taxis that you young people all use now. I've never been in one. Instead of contacting a normal taxi driver, you open up some app. Say, "I want to go from here to here. I promise I won't vomit in your car." And then they come and pick you up. And apparently the price depends on what time of day it is or how much oxygen there is in the broader atmosphere or something to do with peak time or busy time or whatever. I don't know how it works. I know, you probably implied to the kids that every time you had a drug deal to do, you'd order up one of those internet taxis and they'd come round. You'd say, well, ironically, kids, now that I've cleaned my life up, I'm now working as an internet taxi driver, earning a proper honest living. Isn't it great? And the kids will go, oh, you're bringing drug dealers around to sell drugs. And you'll say, that's none of my business and it's not my fault. Just because I've stopped dealing drugs doesn't mean we can expect every drug user to stop being served drugs permanently, immediately. No, they have to come down off them gently. I'm not selling drugs anymore, but someone has to. It's just like with alcohol. If you're a very, very serious alcoholic and you stop drinking suddenly, you can die from that, from the withdrawal. So I presume it's the same with a lot of drugs. So that's what you tell the children. You say, just because I got arrested and ended up in jail and turned my life around, doesn't mean everyone in the world immediately stops taking drugs instantly. So someone has to serve us that. And the kids will say, well, does that mean that whoever's carrying on your drug dealing activities should be considered an innocent helper who's just doing it to save lives? Is that what you're saying? And you'll say, no, I'm not saying that at all. I no longer speak for that industry or for my, whatever the opposite of predecessors are, whoever is doing what I did now. I can't speak for them. You'd have to ask them about that when they finally turn their lives around. And the kids will say, well, if they're carrying on your work for the sole purpose of making sure these drug purchasers don't die from sudden withdrawal, surely they don't need to turn their life around. They're doing good. And you'll say, that's between them and the judge. It's nothing to do with me. Leave me out of this, kids. I'm just here to tell you, don't do drugs and don't, you know, don't run people over with your bicycle. It's one of the least cool crimes you can do, at least if you're a drug dealer. I'll tell you this one thing, kids, and I didn't tell you this because, for one thing, it's a fictional thing on the podcast. Well, for another thing, I didn't tell you this, but one of the cool things about being a drug dealer is that you can stress the drug dealing part of your story and not mention the fact that you're a cyclist. And you sound much cooler, even if you're delivering the drugs by bicycle, which of course I wasn't. I was getting internet taxis everywhere. And the kids will say, oh, that's great. That's great. Where do we sign up? And you'll say, where do you sign up to be what? And they'll say, where do we sign up to, well, whatever it is you're selling here, I don't know. This is a careers day, isn't it? And you'll say, yes, you take a career in, any legitimate career, because any legitimate career will be legal. I'm just telling you what I did wasn't legal, so don't do that. Don't take a career in running people over with your bicycle or selling drugs, whether it be by internet taxi or bicycle. Or internet bicycle. You can order a bicycle on the internet now. Or you can order a cyclist on the internet who'll come to you with your shopping, I understand. You get pretty much anything online now. You can get a bicycle, which you order or collect somewhere and then dump in the street somewhere for someone to trip over. And the same person who trips over that can get run over by a drug delivering bicyclist. And you can order a bicycle shopping online, and that's where you don't even go to the shop. You order a cyclist to go and do your shopping and then bring it to your door, like a drug dealer, but it's not drugs. Well, unless you get maybe some paracetamol. Some online supermarkets let you buy a box of paracetamol. I don't know, do they make the bicycles deliver that? I don't know how it works. I've never done any of this except normal online shopping. I've never been a drug dealer. I've never bought drugs. I was a cyclist as a teenager. I've never got an online cycling thing. Two cats walk into a bar at the Colosseum in the middle of a gladiatorial match, in the middle of a series of games that's going on all afternoon. I doubt they stop for a break in the middle of a gladiator fight. A referee going, oh, we'll stop now. We're going to have a little break. Everyone go back and sit in your corner. Or maybe they do. Maybe they do. They do that at boxing matches. No, they don't really have breaks like that. But the referee can go, hold on now, both of you. Back in your corners for a minute. Calm down. whoever's looking after the boxers can come along and give them a bite of an orange or whatever. Is that what they do? Did they give them a bite of an orange? I've never into boxing or sports of any kind, but I've watched a couple of boxing movies. I've watched Clint Eastwood train some woman to be a boxer and then she's in some accident and ends up dead or something. And I've watched that one with Robert De Niro in it, playing a real boxer in the 60s or 70s. Robert De Niro used to do this thing for movies where he lived the role. A taxi driver, he went and bought an actual taxi and drove around New York to see what driving a taxi felt like. And then he did that boxing thing, Raging Bull. He lost about 3 tons of weight just to get into the role. And then he learned how to box. He boxed loads of people in the face. He said, I'm going to box you in the face. And he boxed them in the face. And he said, excuse me, that's assault. This is the workplace and you're boxing me in the face. You're lucky you're not in the era of phone cameras. This would be all over YouTube within minutes and your career would be over. And of course, Robert De Niro just says, oh, I'm a boxer. I became a legitimate boxer for this role, so I'm allowed to go around and punch people in the face in the workplace because I work as a boxer. So obviously in my workplace, I box and I punch people. I punch people in the face. You're allowed to punch back, by the way. It's perfectly reasonable. If Robert De Niro punches you in the face at work, you're perfectly entitled to punch back. He won't take offence at it. He's a decent, fair man, I'm sure. He knows it's just art. Starting personal is just art. Robert De Niro knows all about art because his father, Robert De Niro Sr., was quite a famous artist. He was a quite well-known painter. Robert De Niro himself made a documentary about Robert De Niro Sr. He said, this is a profile about Robert De Niro, not me, my father, who had the same name. He was named after me. He was a painter. He used to paint pictures. And that's how I got into pictures. Robert De Niro would appear in these movies that were all made by Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese, in the interviews, he always talks about making pictures. He says, I made a picture. He means he made a movie or a film, but he calls them pictures. He says, I made a picture. I used to do this as a child. I come home from school to my parents and say, I made a picture at school. Look, it's me and you and my siblings and our cat, our unnamed cat, standing in front of a house with 2 windows on it. It looks like the size of a tree house. It's very unrealistic and a smiling sun. I say, look, I made a picture. Isn't it great? And my parents would say, oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. And then they'd say, have we given our cat a proper name yet? The cat situation was far from perfect. When I grew up and got a household of my own, we became extensive cat owners. And we gave them all proper names. All of our cats that we've ever had have had names that end in either Y or I. You had Jody, Bowsy, Odie, Oaky, Ginny, Muddy, Chili, Kofi the Second, Banky, all of those names get a proper naming system. But no, as children, our first cat was called TC, which I found out later stands for Tomcat. And then our second cat was called Sting. I didn't pick that name. I was about 4. I presume someone picked that name. I presume it was after the singer Sting, who was quite well known at the time. This would be the early 1980s. Essentially, he was a punk band singer in those days, which I don't understand how that became a cat's name in our house. My father would not have approved of punk. No, even if it was just clean American-style punk that the Police were doing. I know they were English, but there's a type of punk music that you Americans have where they're kind of harmless. You let your children listen to it, it's fine. Some fella going, in the midnight hour, we cry, no, no, oh, maybe not that, because that's filth. Well, no, you Americans, you have your punk song. In fact, the opening theme tune of this program, it was made by a punk band. If you listen to it, it sounds a bit punky. The drums sound, to my ear, kind of punky. So yes, there is punk music on this program, despite my having no interest in punk. Well, that's because it's safe American punk. These Americans, they do their punk. We know it's harmless, really. It's harmless. You'd let your child listen to that. It's harmless. It's the same with Sting and the Police. They're English. I think one of them was American. They're harmless. Also, in the case of the police, they're also tremendously uninteresting. American punk can be reasonably interesting. Well, it's harmless. They're not going around saying, God save the Queen, this fascist regime. Even the Canadian ones, I don't think they do that. In Canada, do you have punk singers who go around saying, God save the Queen, this fascist regime? No, you do not. You do, especially not with harmonicas like I'm doing. I was raised well, so I played that on harmonica. And I made sure to point out that I didn't create that song, I'm just quoting. There was an English band called the Sex Pistols when I was a child. They go around going, God save the Queen. They go, I wanna be anarchy. And they go around looking angry, a heavy one. They make sure not to be musical. No. No, you want to be a rebel, so they rebelled by being non-musical and putting out this meaningless drivel. And they'd have green hair. They'd have green spiked hair. What's that punk thing they used to have? They would stick up in the middle. It came back later. I made a comeback as Sonic the Hedgehog. He has that kind of haircut that the punks used to have. I don't think anyone made a connection. But when Sonic the Hedgehog turned up, it was the 80s or 90s, had a punked haircut. Well, that's only because that's what hedgehogs have, presumably. Don't they? Or maybe they don't. Maybe I'm assuming because of Sonic the Hedgehog that all hedgehogs are like that. I don't know. I didn't play computer games or listen to punk music as a child. So I don't know. This is just what I glean from the popular culture that I'm exposed to. Mostly from YouTube series about popular culture of the past. If you dry something with a tea towel, the tea towel gets wet. The thing you're drying with the tea towel gets progressively drier and drier, but now the tea towel is wet. And people go, oh Christ, this is wet now. This is wet. What am I supposed to do with this? It's not like a sponge where you can just squeeze it out. A sponge would be much better for drying your plates and dishes. If you don't own a dishwasher, use a sponge. Don't use a tea towel. A tea towel is a ridiculous implement. It takes the wetness and it just soaks it into itself. You have to dry it before you use it again. So you put it on the radiator and that sends out the message both to your subconscious and to the outside world that you're so useless at laundry that you think when a tea towel is finished, used up, you can just put it on the radiator to dry instead of washing it. Which I suppose is perfectly reasonable if you've just been using it to dry up water. But still, it doesn't feel right, does it? No. It feels like you're just not properly doing what the young people call adulting. It feels like you're not adulting properly. You're using up this tea towel until it's wet and then you're just drying it and using it again without putting it in the wash. Now, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. But the problem is, it's not enough to just be reasonable. It has to appear reasonable to the outside world. I mean, I worry about her image these days with things like this. No. So I suggest you get a sponge, not the one you use in your bathroom, but the same type of sponge. I have a sponge that I keep in the kitchen. Now, I don't use it to dry things. We use tea towels for that because I'm not going to switch my entire household over to using sponges instead of tea towels because I don't want them to lock me up in a mental asylum. If I was back in my 20s, living on my own in my bed sitting room apartment, and if I thought of this at the time, I would have stopped using tea towels and used a sponge instead, a dedicated drying sponge to dry my one cup and my one plate that I use most days. I do have one thing that I use a sponge for in the kitchen involving drying nowadays. There's a little reservoir in the dishwasher. It fills up with water sometimes when it's not supposed to fill up with water. It's like the little petrol tank on the top of your lawnmower. Except there's not petrol in there usually, it's wastewater if something's going wrong. So sometimes I'll get a sponge and I'll squeeze it into that little compartment. You squash up the sponge, you squeeze it into that compartment. You let it soak up all the liquid and then you take it out. Then you squeeze the liquid down a drain somewhere. If people think the only way you can carry liquids is in a jug or a container or something, but no, a sponge works just as well. In fact, now that I think about it, when we were children, we were given religious instructions in school. We were told about this poor man who got nailed to a cross and left to die. And we were told in the last hours, someone was concerned that he was thirsty. So they got a sponge. They dipped it in a bucket of water, presumably. They held it up to him on a stick and they dabbed it against his mouth so he could have some moisture from the sponge. So, and surprising that didn't take off, the idea of drinking stuff from a sponge. That same church, part of their tradition is to drink wine ceremoniously. The church needs the wine drinking that's done ceremoniously to look different from the wine drinking that all those normal folk do at home or in a pub or something. And one way they could achieve that is by doing it with a sponge in the church. And why not? When you get your wafer of blessed bread in a church, back before COVID anyway, one of the ways it would be distributed was by the priest or the minister placing it on your tongue directly. Didn't even use a tongs. You used to place it on your tongue unless you made it very clear that you didn't. And the way you made it very clear that you didn't was by holding out your hands very high up. You'd hold out your hands, you'd have your left hand there and your right hand on top of it. The palm of your hand would be there, but in the palm of your hand would be the back of your other hand. Two layers of hand palm in front of your face. The idea was to put out a clear signal to this priest or this minister that you can be trusted to take this wafer in your hand. Even though it's the body of Christ, you can be trusted to take it in your hand, you're capable of feeding it to yourself. Give the priest or the minister the confidence to know that they don't need to shove it into your mouth, that you can be trusted to take it in the palm of your hand. Your hand is flat and then you have your other hand on top of that hand, so it's two layers of hands. He puts it in the top hand, in the palm of that. He'd probably use a tea towel there just before you go up to make sure the palm of your hand isn't sweaty, because that might be all fussing as well. You shove it in your mouth and then you bless yourself. That's how you consume bread ceremoniously. So something similar could be done with a sponge for the wine. Now, they don't usually give wine to everybody who attends the mass. Hundreds of people. They can't be handing out glasses of wine to everybody. But maybe they could have a system whereby there are sponges. They soak the sponge in a bucket of wine and put that on the end of a spear. And someone holds it out to you in front of your face and squeezes it into your mouth. I'd be okay with that. They brought in this thing in the 1980s where you're allowed to go to mass on a Saturday night. And that would officially count as your obligation for mass for that week. You wouldn't have to go on the Sunday morning. You could go at 7 p.m. on a Saturday evening. And the nearest church was one parish away that had a 7 p.m. evening mass, and there was one by the Franciscan order. Looked more like monks than priests. It looked a bit like that episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where Spock turns up, he's secretly working the Vulcans, reuniting with whatever they used to be united with, some other world. Spock turns up in that, in disguise, and he looks a bit like a monk in that. At least he does to me. Maybe it's just because he's standing up in this weird cafe drinking soup out of a bowl with one of the modern Star Trek people. I'm not sure, but I seem to remember he looked a bit like a monk in that. Maybe it was just his haircut and the way he was. I know drinking soup out of a bowl standing up in a cafe isn't particularly a monk-related activity, but I think it was just the overall impression I got from that scene. Spock and this other fella, they had a secret meeting in this cafe, and there was a weird cafe on another planet where people stand around this table, there's no chairs, they stand there and they drink soup out of a bowl. They don't even put the soup down on the table, there is a table, but they hold the bowl up to their chest and eat the soup from the bowl. Doesn't sound very relaxing at all. I presume it was lunchtime, because in our world, soup is something you have for lunch in the middle of your workday. in the middle of a work day, you're going into a place where you have to stand eating the soup. Maybe they're sitting down during their work and they use their lunch break to have a rest by standing up. That feels like a rest to them. I don't know. When I think about monks, that's what I think about. That scene with Spock in disguise, undercover. I think maybe now that I think about it, it was his haircut. He looked a bit like a Beatles pudding bowl haircut. And the fact that he was drinking soup out of a bowl, which I know is not something particular monks do. I just had a feel of that. Making soup is the sort of thing you can do while you meditate. You feel like you're making something with the natural things from nature or something. That's probably helpful to that. A very little experience of monasteries. So I'm not claiming to know anything particular about monasteries. They're probably not comparable to nunneries and convents. Monks are a whole separate thing. Monks are more likely to live further away up the mountains or somewhere because they're not running a school. I know that church I went to, they were running that church, but that was a weird church anyway. It was an unusual place. They had a church that didn't look like a church at all. It looked like a space-age building. It was actually quite nice. Different. That's what it is, different. So no, I'm not claiming to have any particular special experience of monks. In case I give the impression that I did, no, I don't. Nobody does when they go into a monastery, do they? They've never been to a monastery before. They go into a monastery and they say, I'm in a monastery now. I'd like to be in a monastery at least for a while. Some of them go, I'm going to be in my monastery at least for one lifetime, and then they stay there until they're dead. And they fully expect to turn up in their next life in somewhere that's not a monastery. I don't know. Would you be that confident? If you believe in reincarnation and you spend a lifetime as a monk, are you confident that you're not going to come back as a monk in the next life and go, oh Christ? Well, you're in the next life. You won't realize till you're about 20 and you think, oh Christ, I've wandered into another monk life. The whole point of the monk life was that I knew I have more than one life, so I could afford to spend one life in a monastery. But no, I didn't want to do two in a row. That's ridiculous. I want to go back into the real world. So I suppose the best way to guard against that would be just become a monk for 5 years of your life. Spend the rest of that life living a normal life in the open world. And then you won't have to worry about what you're going to be in the next life. No. So that's the way I would do that, I suppose. But again, no, I don't know anything about monks or monasteries. I don't really think that stuff about Spock in Star Trek The Next Generation in the cafe really adds anything to your knowledge about monks. It doesn't demonstrate any knowledge of mine. No, I thought I hope to say that's as much as I know about monks, and that's nothing. I do know that church I went to that was run by monks. They had particularly good parking arrangements. I think we're approaching the end of today's episode of this ongoing series of programs that started 20 years ago, took a brief 7-year interlude a few years ago, and then came back. But I think we're approaching the end of this installment. But if you've been here for the last 869, then you'll know it's not over when this is over. No, it's not over when this is over. It'll be an 871 along probably soon. We seem to be doing them quite often now. We don't leave 7-year gaps between them anymore. No. I'm very sorry I left a 7-year gap between two episodes at one point. I think it was after number 792. I disappeared completely for 7 years. I took the whole thing offline, went away, and then I came back and said, oh, it's been 7 years. Sorry about that. I got held up in traffic or something. Obviously not actual, literal traffic. Traffic in my mind, I suppose. I was stuck in traffic in my mind. It's going, oh, Christ, there's a big tail back here from my frontal lobe to my medium lobe. I'm never going to get to episode 793 this way, especially if I haven't bothered my arse recording anything in 7 years. No, I got it together. I said, fuck this. I'm going to make another one. And then I came back. And that was more than 2 years ago now. I haven't disappeared on any 7-year breaks again since. So I think I've got out of the habit of taking 7-year absences. In fact, I only did it once, so wasn't really a habit, it was a once-off. It does mean now, though, that coming up to the 20th anniversary of this podcast in the summer of this year, that's going to feel a bit fake. It's been 20 years. I've only made podcasts for 13 of them. And one of the 13, I put two episodes out, I think, that year. We have to put an asterisk beside everything. In the spirit of wholeness and honesty and being clear, hasn't been 20 years of non-stop, like some of the other lunatics who started the same year as this. No, you're all lunatics if you went non-stop for 20 years making shit like this and never stopped. I stopped. I went into a monastery for 7 years. I said, I'm going to disappear and go into a monastery for the rest of my life. I went into a monastery then for 7 years. And then at one point, about 3 years into my time in the monastery, I got arrested, unfortunately, for something I'd done before I went into the monastery. So I spent the last 4 of those 7 years I spent in a prison or jail. I got confused because I hear you Americans talking and you always talk like prison and jail are two completely different things. And I don't understand that. You have something where you have a county jail or a state prison. I don't know. Where I come from, a jail or a prison is the same thing. It's two cheeks of the same arse. It's a place you go to where they lock you up. You spend your day sitting in a jail cell, looking out through the bars, trying not to get a striped sunburn on your face. Or maybe trying to get a striped sunburn on your face. Probably easier. I know you don't get much sun in the prison, but because you're behind bars all the time, there's going to be some sort of stripe from the not really very bright sun indoors. There's going to be some contrast between the part of your face that gets no light at all, which is where the bars are, and the gaps between the bars. You're going to come out striped anyway. You have jumpsuits in America. All your prisoners wear these plain orange jumpsuits, if I understand correctly. In other countries, we associate jails with uniforms that have stripes. I think we do anyway. The comics I used to read as a child did have these prisoners in jails and they'd be wearing comical vertical stripes. Sometimes they'd depict French men as wearing stripes, but they'd be wearing horizontal stripes and they'd have a string of onions hanging around their neck. And that was very stereotypical. Very, very stereotypical. So there's probably something to be said for not giving your child a diet of nothing but comic books. Anyway, I think we're approaching the end of today's episode of this thing. And if we're not, then I'll do another segment, but you'll have heard it before this. So if we're not approaching the end, which I think we might not be after all, I'll just say here that we're approaching the end and I'll put this in at the end and it'll all be fine. So be great. Absolutely fucking fantastic. Just leave all that to me. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about what order this is going to come out in. By the time you hear this, it's already set in stone. Anyway, the end.